Okay.
Jaya, Jaya, Sri Chaitanya, Jaya, Nityananda, Jaya, Dvaita Chandra, Jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya, Jaya, Sri Chaitanya, Jaya, Nityananda, Jaya, Dvaita Chandra, Jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya, Jaya, Sri Chaitanya, Jaya, Nityananda, Jaya, Dvaita Chandra, Jaya, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda. So today is the, of course, the glorious appearance day of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Yuga Avatar, who came to teach the Sankirtan Yajna, the sacrifice of Sankirtan. So, Om Gana Timirandasya, Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Hare Krishna. So today we're going to read a little bit about Lord Chaitanya's appearance from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, one of the two main biographies of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. There's the Chaitanya Bhagwat by Vrindavan Das Thakur and the Chaitanya Charitamrita by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, who wrote the Sri Chaitanya Chaitanya Charitamrita where? Does anyone know where he wrote it? No. What? No. Any other ideas? Shamakund. Thought I'd be a little tricky for you. Shamakund is the place where Radharani bathes, and Radhakund is the place where Krishna bathed more. Because after Shamakund and Radhakund were created by Krishna and Srimati Radharani and her associates, respectively, then Krishna said that every day I'll go bathe in Radhakund, and Radharani said every day I'll go bathing in Shamakund. And actually, there's a very special place right near, actually it's about 20 yards away from where Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami wrote the Chaitanya Charitamrita, a very special place where the gopis would go bathing every day. And right at that place, there's a pilu tree. The pilu tree is like a very short tree. Sometimes it has little thorns on it. Anyway, so this pilu tree was a brahmana who resided in Kashi, and he wanted to understand Krishna's pastimes. This is thousands of years ago. And so he appeared as a pilu tree in Shamakund, and that pilu tree performed the service of holding the gopis' clothes when they would go bathing in Shamakund. Anyone's heard that story before? Yeah. They would put their clothes on this pilu tree, who was a Brahmin. And later on, our great Rasacharya, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, was able to communicate with the pilu tree and hear about Krishna's pastimes, and therefore you find elaborate descriptions of Radha and Krishna's pastimes written by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's called the Rasacharya. And a lot of those pastimes he got by communicating and connecting with the Brahmin who was the pilu tree. And that pilu tree is still there today. Anyway, without getting too much into the Radhakund Shamakund stories, the point is that Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami chanted by the banks of the Shamakund, and his bhajan kutir was right there. Of course, Radhakund and Shamakund are there connected. So that's the Radhakund area. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was the one who encountered Radhakund and Shamakund. They were ponds and paddy fields. Paddy field means like a field of rice or something like that. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went to this place called Arishtagram. Arishtagram. Arishtagram is named after the Arishtasura demon who was killed by Krishna And after that, we're not going to tell the whole story about the Radhakund creation because it's not applicable for this particular class. But after that, Krishna created Shyamkund and Radharani created Radhakund. So Lord Chaitanya came across this village, Arishtakund, Arishtapura, and he asked the people, are there any kunds here? And there were two kunds. They didn't have the names Radhakund and Shyamkund. They were like, one was called Gauri-kund, which means golden, and the other one, I forget, it was Kali or something, kund, that means dark. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ran out into the paddy field, and there was just this little pond in the paddy field. It wasn't a whole kund with concrete steps like we have today or stores surrounding it. He just ran out to the paddy field and started bathing in the middle of the paddy field. And in this way, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu discovered the place of Radhakund and Shyamkund, and later on those kunds were excavated by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, specifically Raghunath Das Goswami, who was basically the kund acharya, who had the kunds excavated. And, of course, Radhakund is just about in a square shape, but the Shyamkund is in a very unusual shape because Raghunath Das Goswami had a dream, and in that dream, the Pandavas appeared to him and said that we're living on the banks of the Shyamkund as trees, so please don't cut us down. So the Shyamkund has a very unusual shape. It's not a completely square shape. It's hard to describe the shape. It just like takes jogs from one side to the other. So that's Radhakund and Shyamkund. So the reason I'm describing Radhakund and Shyamkund is because it's very much connected with the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami. So Chaitanya Charitamrita is the most philosophical text in regard to the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, you have the Chaitanya Bhagavat written by Vrindavan Das Thakur, which deals more with the childhood pastimes of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu based on the Katachara or the diary of Murari Gupta, who was Hanuman and Lord Ram's pastimes. But the Chaitanya Charitamrita goes into greater philosophical depth as far as the reasons for the Lord's appearance, the Lord's ontological position, the elaborate descriptions of the Lord's ontological position, the elaborate descriptions of Lord Nityananda's position, you know, who he is. Of course, he's Balaram Hoile Natai, and how he serves the Lord in various manifestations, and descriptions of Advaitacharya's position, descriptions of Srivas's position, and descriptions of Gadadhara Pandit Goswami's position. So it's a very elaborate philosophical treatise, and that's why Srila Prabhupada decided to translate the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita before he translated, which he didn't translate the Chaitanya Bhagavat, but before he dealt with other books about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In fact, he published a summary study of the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, known as the Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, very early in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, so that we would understand Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, before we read a little bit, I just want to describe the reasons for Lord Chaitanya's advent. There's two basic reasons. One reason is the esoteric reason, and the other one is the exoteric reason. For those of you who don't understand these two words, esoteric means basically it's hidden. It's sort of like a secret reason, or basically it's Lord Chaitanya's own personal reasons, you know, internal personal reasons, which are considered the primary reasons for the Lord's advent. And then the exoteric is the what's understood by everybody. So the exoteric reason for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's advent is obviously to give everybody Krishna prema. But not just love of Krishna, but love of Krishna in the mood of the inhabitants of Braj. Because many, many appearances of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are there. As we know, the Lord has as many incarnations as there are waves in the ocean. In other words, it's innumerable incarnations, innumerable manifestations. Generally, devotees, like, they they worship the 10 basic incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like Korma, Matsya, Varaha, Nrsimha, Balaram, and of course there's Balaram and Krishna, Parashuram, which are listed by Jayadeva Goswami in his famous Dasha Avatar Sloka. However, Lord Chaitanya advented in the exoteric understanding to give the service and the love to the devotees that the were manifest by the residents of Braj, specifically the gopis, also the coward men and the coward ladies, those in parental ras, and also those in the friendship ras and servitude ras, the four rasas that are there in the spiritual world. Of course, there's also shanta ras, but the shanta ras, pure shanta ras, is not indicative of the constitutional position of the living entity. The shanta ras must be mixed with a little dasha or service to be constitutional. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Jivera Svarupa Hoi Nitya Krishna Das, the Svarupa, or the position of the living entity, or the form of the living entity, is to be a servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to teach what no other appearance of the Lord could teach, which is the intimate loving exchanges that only occur in Goloka Vrindavan, that don't occur in any other realm of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's the exoteric understanding. As we know, other incarnations or even devotees can accomplish other purposes. But it was required for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to come himself and to come in the mood of his greatest devotee, Srimati Radharani, to accomplish this particular purpose. So the esoteric reason for the Lord's advent is very interesting. That Krishna, he is controlled by Srimati Radharani. Of course, Srimati Radharani is known as Madan Mohan Mohini, and Krishna is Madan Mohan, the attractor of Cupid, and Radharani is the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. So Krishna is examining Srimati Radharani's position, and he wants to understand that position. As we know, the Supreme Lord is what? Satchidananda Vigraha, that he is full of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. But there is some knowledge that he is hankering for, and there is some ananda that he's hankering for. Of course, he's full of bliss, but actually, he wants some ananda that he doesn't have, and that ananda is serving himself. As Prabhupada commented one time, the Mayavadis, impersonalists, they want to become God. And, of course, they can't become God. That is impossible. However, their desire is to become God because they are thinking, according to Krishna in the Gita, Ishwaraham aham bhogi siddham balavan sukhi. I am perfect, powerful, and happy. I want to be perfect, powerful, and happy. You know, this is the demoniac nature. So, Prabhupada commented that it is better to be servant of God than to be God. And there's more enjoyment in being servant of God than actually being the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's more ananda. So Krishna, looking at his best devotee's position, Srimati Radharani's position, is thinking, she is enjoying so much happiness by serving me. Why don't I get that happiness? So he is thinking, I want to experience that happiness. Also, he is looking at himself and thinking, I am so attractive, so I want to see myself through the eyes of my beloved. It's very interesting. In this material world, we have this propensity to look at ourselves in the mirror, isn't it? I think mirror, mirror on the wall is the most attractive sannyasi of them all. We have this propensity to, you know, just admire ourselves. And that's why in ashrams, traditionally, they wouldn't have mirrors. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur never used the mirror, because as soon as there's a mirror, then there's preening in front of the mirror, especially the ladies. like Robin said, one of the ladies' primary activities is combing their hair. It's done in front of a mirror, obviously, most of the time. I don't know. So, but anyway, I assume it's done in front of a mirror. So, Krishna also, there's many stories how Krishna sometimes sees a reflection of himself in the water, and he says, "Who is this attractive person? He's attracting my mind." So Krishna is even attracted. Of course, that is not false ego. That is not a deviation from spiritual life, because Krishna is most attractive. Whereas with ourselves, our attraction, of course we have some attraction, some beauty. It comes basically from the soul, because a dead body is not at all attractive. And this comes because of the soul's connection to Krishna. Because we are Mami Vamsa Jivaloke, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. We are part and parcel of Krishna. We are Angsa. Vibhinangsa, not Swamsa. Swamsa means God. Vibhinangsa means expansion of the Supreme Personality of God. So Krishna, he wants to see his own beauty. And so therefore he thinks, I want to take up the mood of my beloved, Srimati Radharani, and be able to see myself through her eyes. And while he has seen himself through Srimati Radharani's eyes, he's exhibiting intense emotions of even separation from himself. So you have the festivals, such as the Rathiatra festival, where Lord Chaitanya is assuming completely the mood of Srimati Radharani, and he is feeling the intense mood, Vipralamba Seva, and trying to drag Krishna, who is himself, back to, trying to drag himself in a metaphorical sense, back to Vrindavan, because the Rathiatra festival is reminiscent of Krishna's visit to Kurukshetra, where he met the gopis after many, many years, and the gopis wanted to take Krishna back to Vrindavan, and they couldn't relate to Krishna in the mood of a king, in the opulent mood, so they were thinking, let us take him back to Vrindavan, because this is famous verse. Lord Chaitanya came up with this. This is the same moonlit nights in the month of Chaitra. It's from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he's the same Krishna, I'm the same Radharani, but I want to enjoy with him on the banks of the Vatasi, on the banks of the Jamuna. So Vrindavan is inseparable from the pastimes of Vrindavan and Jagannath Puri, inseparable from the pastimes and the mood of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, so this is another reason why Lord Chaitanya wants to experience this Vipralamba Seva, this love of himself, and he wants to understand that love. So these are the esoteric reasons for the Lord's advent. Therefore, he comes down once in a day of Lord Brahma. Not every Kali Yuga. However, in every Kali Yuga, there is Sankirtan. But in this particular Kali Yuga, that Sankirtan is promulgated by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So every Kali Yuga, the Yuga Dharma is Sankirtan. Try to understand that. And in every Satya Yuga, just meditation. I was just speaking to someone yesterday. They were telling me how they know someone who meditates on the light for an hour in the morning, an hour in the evening. But that's not the meditation that's prescribed in the Satya Yuga. The meditation that's prescribed in the Satya Yuga is to meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord. So within the Sankirtan, that is, I'm not going to go through all the yugas, of course, but within the Sankirtan performance are contained all the other yuga dharmas, which is really interesting. Because in the, as I mentioned, Satya Yuga is the meditation, and then in the Treta Yuga, you have the opulent fire sacrifice. In Dwapara Yuga, they have the deity worship. So when you actually chant the Lord's holy names, all these things manifest within your consciousness. And what do I mean by manifest within your consciousness? For example, I'll tell a little story about an interaction I had with a devotee yesterday. One devotee was telling me how miserable the material world is. And of course, I said, right on. You know, this happened to me, that happened to me. And of course, I'm a little empathic. Not that much empathic, but a little. So, but I said, this is the way it is. You know, Krishna says that in the Gita. Dukalayam Ashashvatam. Brahma from the highest planet to the lowest planet. Mamupetra to Kanti. It's all places of misery where birth and death take place, but one who comes to my abode never takes birth again in this material world. So I was just reiterating Krishna's philosophy, which we all know. And the devotee was saying, but how are devotees supposed to be happy? We see all these devotees subjected to these miseries in this world, right? Like Queen Kunti and all of us, you know. Right now we may be riding the wave of material enjoyment. But, you know, I'm looking at some of you who I knew when you were young, like Vajagati and everything like that. Now we're getting older. The little gray hairs are there. You know, it's just not... The old gray mare ain't what she used to be. Right? I mean, isn't it? It just, you know, just doesn't... The get up and... What do they say? The get up and go went up and went. So, that's the nature of the material world. So I was explaining. So the devotee was asking, but we joined the Krishna conscious movement. We're supposed to be happy. You know, that was part of the contract. You know, it wasn't even fine print. It was actually the main contract. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. You know, and look, you know, getting old, and this person doesn't like me, that person doesn't like me. And, you know, teeth are starting to rattle a little bit, so... And, you know, I'm not going to talk about everything else. And then we're worried about the other things like the sunspot activity and the, you know, all of our GPS and electricity may go off today because there's a sunspot flare. So, I mean, all these things are occurring. Or Iran may have a nuclear bomb. So, what happened? You know, Krishna fulfilled his agreement with us? Should we take him to court? You know, go to a lawyer? No. Actually, the real happiness is within. We have to develop our internal life. So by chanting, it's not that you just become spaced out. I mean, sometimes people speculate, which of course is an offense on the chanting, on the Hare Krishna mantra, you know, that you chant and it puts you have either more alpha waves or beta waves or theta waves, whatever it is. But actually, when you chant, you develop a real life internally, which is a relationship with Krishna. In other words, there's something going on, just like we read about Krishna's pastime. This is, of course, in a higher stage of chanting. But, of course, immediately Srila Rupa Goswami describes that chanting and the process of devotional service relieves you from all types of distress. So when you chant, ultimately there's a whole world that should develop internally. And that's the world of Krishna and his associates in Braj. Because that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to teach us. So when you chant, you have this world. So the external world doesn't appear so significant anymore. I mean, for example, let's say in India, there are it's very popular, these Bollywood films. Anyone's heard of Bollywood films? Because life can be really intense in India, and they have these giant theaters. I mean, I just came from India 2 days ago, and I've seen these megaplexes that are springing up all over the place, you know, and malls with big theaters. I mean, theaters are so big, it's amazing. Because it allows people to escape from the struggles that they have in the ordinary world. So, in the same way, of course, we're not taking up Krishna consciousness just to escape. Of course, that may be one of the original motivations, as Krishna says in the Gita, isn't it? Chaturvedha bhajanti mam, because one's miserable. But still, whatever motivation one has for Krishna consciousness, then there's a whole spiritual television, as Srila Prabhupada would say, that one develops within their hearts. Prabhupada said a pure devotee has a spiritual television. He can tune in to any channel he wants. You know, Ram's pastimes tonight. We're not talking about Ram Sagar's videos. We're talking about the actual original Ram's pastimes. You know, so by chanting, that's the meditation that a devotee has. We're talking about the different yugas and how the yuga dharma manifests itself, all the different dharmas and the different yugas manifest themselves by one who chants Hare Krishna. In other words, you're not bereft of any of these dharmas. So the pastimes of Krishna, what is it called? Nama, Guna Rupa Lila. Right? By the Nam, by the chanting, the qualities of Krishna become very prominent in one's consciousness. As long as one chants without offense, as long as one serves the Vaishnavas at the same time, follows the order of the spiritual master, etc. There's a whole lot of rules. But if you chant like that, then Krishna's qualities become so much appreciable to you. And you begin to meditate and remember those qualities. Qualities like Dhira Lalita, Dhira Prashanta, Dhira Datta, Dhira Datta, Krishna being playful, Krishna being tricky. Just like I was reading the, what was that book? The Mukta Charita by Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami wrote this book. It's an amazing book. The Mukta Charita is the story of the pearl pastime. And in this pastime, you basically have the gopis and Krishna insulting each other for about 4 hours. I mean, it's an amazing book. But Prabhupada said we should peruse these books of the Goswamis. Not many books, but a few books we can read. And so you have Krishna manifesting this playful and even teasing aspect of his personality. I mean, normally people think God, he's just, you know, sits there on a throne and behaves himself. And he's meant to serve us, you know, what? Jaya Jagadisha Hari Swami Jaya, you know, please give me whatever I want, my dear Lord. So, or he sits and judges us at the time of death like Yamaraj. So there you find depicted in the Goswami's writings the different intricacies of Krishna's personality, which are so interesting. I mean, he's actually insulting the gopis, and the gopis are insulting him back. This is one thing. I'm just talking about this because I just read this. I did a recitation of it, actually. It's recorded. And then you have other pastimes where Krishna's feeling anxiety, God's feeling anxiety because Radharani is in a huff and a puff and she won't meet with him. So that's by the nama, then the guna, the qualities of the Lord actually become very attractive to one. In this world, we're attracted to different variety. As Prabhupada would say, what is it? Variety is the mother of enjoyment. Like if you're absorbed in the material world, you really have to eat some different food every day, you know, to titillate your taste buds. So you have to keep changing things. That's called Bhogatyaga, Chapalasuga, all those other nice things. You know, flickering happiness, renunciation, just like you're all fasting today and tonight you get to eat. So that's the nature of enjoyment in this world. The variety. The variety in this world. So variety is the mother of enjoyment. So, but in the spiritual world is filled with much more variety. And when one experiences the variety in the spiritual world, and one loses a desire to, let's say, titillate the tongue, like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to Raghunath Das Goswami, when Raghunath Das Goswami asked him, what are the principles for one in the renounced order of life? And Lord Chaitanya said, one should not eat opulent food, wear fine clothing, or think of women even in dreams, and one should think of Krishna as heart of heart. So that's meditation. So that's how a natural renunciation arises, by the meditational process, which comes from chanting the Lord's holy names. So I'm trying to connect the other dharmas and the yugas to chanting. So when you chant nama, then guna, the qualities of the Lord become manifest, and you become so overwhelmed by these varieties of qualities that you don't become interested in this world anymore. That's vairagya. As described by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vairagya Vidya Nidya Bhakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Purana Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari Kripam Buddhi Vyastra Maham Prapadya. It's interesting that Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and glorified Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you've come to teach renunciation, vairagya, and to give knowledge concerning your devotional service, renunciation from all those things which are not productive of Krishna consciousness. So therefore, naturally, one becomes renounced of this world by that nama guna, and then after that, rupa. Rupa, one begins to perceive the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then finally, lila. One enters into the lila, is able to perceive the lila, and in the higher stages of sadhana bhakti, which is called raganuga bhakti, one actually follows in the footsteps of a resident of Vrindavan and is able to serve a resident of Vrindavan in Krishna lila. So all this is going on internally. So that's meditation. That is meditation. Not like the impersonalists say, meditation just means to make the mind still. That is boring. That meditation, if it's called meditation, is just simply a boring waste of time. Because you may make the mind still, and then something else will come to agitate it. And what's the good of that? We're not interested in shanti, we're interested in bhakti. So, anyway, so going through the other dharmas, so then there's sacrifice. So the second Treta Yuga, there's sacrifice, which is the Yuga Dharma. So by chanting, you engage in the ultimate sacrifice. Manasa deha geha yokishamor arpilam tuyapati nandakashore. What is it? My mind, my body, my words, they're all yours. Instead of just sitting down at some fire sacrifice where you go swaha all the time, throw some grains in, you throw your whole existence. You understand? You give your whole existence to the Lord. And actually, first one starts, I belong to Krishna. Of course, the gopis are thinking Krishna belongs to me. That's a little different, but that's a higher stage. We're not going to talk about that. But you sacrifice everything. Like Prabhupada talked about how the young people join the Krishna conscious movement, they sacrifice their youth, their time of so-called enjoyment to please the Supreme Personality of God. And I remember when Vidyagati and I were young. Remember that many years ago? We sacrificed our youth in the fire of Sankirtan. So that's the second dharma, the Treta Yuga dharma, and then the Dwarpa Yuga dharma is deity worship. Of course, we have our deity worship, but one worships the form by the chanting. One worships the form, as we talked about nama and guna rupa lila, the form of the Lord within his mind. That's ultimately what we should come to, is actually to perceive the form of the Lord within our mind while we're chanting, and the form will manifest. And then, of course, in Kali Yuga, the sacrifice is Sankirtan. So Sankirtan means a congregational chanting, not just the chanting by ourselves. And Prabhupada considered the book distribution to be the Brihat Mridanga, or the great chanting, or the great drum, or the great performance of Sankirtan, Sankirtan. Sankirtan means two things, like kirtan with a lot of people, and also means complete chanting. It's interesting. Some of you may not have heard that explanation before. Usually you think of Sankirtan meaning with a lot of people. You know, japa is by yourself, kirtan is one or two people, or by yourself, you can chant a little louder, and Sankirtan means with a lot of people, and Mahasankirtan means with a whole bunch of people, or thousands of people, or whatever, or going out in book distribution. But another meaning of Sankirtan is complete chanting. And that complete chanting means absorption in Krishna's names. Therefore, in our Sampradaya, you have not only the performance of public Sankirtan, you have much more chanting of Krishna's names than at present most devotees do. And in fact, the tradition in our Sampradaya is at least 64 rounds a day. And we have personalities like Haridas Thakur who are chanting 64 times 3. 64 times 3, that's called 3 lakhs. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, 64 rounds is considered a lakh of names. Lakh means 100,000, because within the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, there's 16 names, 16 times 108, 108 times 64 is roughly 100,000. Not exactly 100,000. So 3 lakhs of names Haridas Thakur was chanting. That means, basically, he was chanting at least 18 to 20 hours a day. And our standard is 64 rounds. However, Srila Prabhupada reduced that so that we could preach, so that we could have practical lives and do things to expand the Krishna conscious movement. But Prabhupada wanted those devotees who were not doing practical service to chant 64 rounds. And it is very helpful, following the footsteps of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Srila Prabhupada and our whole sampradaya, to whenever we have time, chant more rounds, especially 64 rounds. Today's a good day to do that if you're not engaged in practical service. Anyway, so this is a Sankirtan movement following the instructions of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And by the performance of Sankirtan, everything is accomplished. Complete chanting, absorbed chanting, with one's mind, Savayamana Krishna Padara Vindayo. Then we should have complete faith that all goals are accomplished by chanting this Maha Mantra. So now we'll speak a little bit. That's the brief introduction. So now we'll read. Sorry, I got carried away. So now we'll speak a little bit about the appearance of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the events that preceded the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So we're greeting the deities 15 minutes later today. Is that right? Does anyone know? Nobody knows. Okay, I assume so, because that's what usually happens. We usually have a new outfit on appearance days of great personalities or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we'll start reading from text 67 in the Adi Lila, chapter 13. This evening we're going to be speaking in general about the Lord's pastimes, not so much philosophy, but just a recitation of different pastimes of the Lord. So now we find descriptions of the exoteric reason for the Lord's advent in the descriptions of Advaitacharya's compassion for the people in general. We'll start here. In the house of Advaitacharya, all the Vaishnavas took pleasure in always chanting, talking about Krishna, always worshipping Krishna, and always chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Prabhupada said, on these principles only does the Krishna consciousness movement go on. Interesting. We have no business other than to talk of Krishna, worship Krishna, and chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. I should mention that at the GBC meetings. That would be a relief. So, but Sri Advaitacharya Prabhu felt pained to see all the people without Krishna consciousness simply merging in material sense gratification. And Srila Prabhupada explains here that a bona fide devotee of Lord Krishna is always pained to see the fallen condition of the whole world. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say, there is no scarcity of anything within this world. The only scarcity is of Krishna consciousness. That is the vision of all pure devotees. Because of this lack of Krishna consciousness in human society, people are suffering terribly, being merged in an ocean of nescience and sense gratification. A devotee onlooker is very much aggrieved to see such a situation in the world. Seeing the condition of the world, he, that is Advaitacharya, began to think seriously of how all these people could be delivered from the clutches of Maya. Sri Advaita Prabhu thought that if Krishna himself appears to distribute the cult of devotional service, then only will liberation be possible for all people. And Srila Prabhupada explains, this is a very interesting purport, very short but interesting. Just as a condemned person can be delivered by a special favor of the chief executive head, the president or king, so the condemned people of this Kali Yuga can be delivered only by the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, or a person especially empowered for this purpose. Srila Advaitacharya Prabhu desired that the Supreme Personality of Godhead advent himself to deliver the fallen souls of this age. In other words, we need special mercy. As described by Rupa Goswami, Namo Mahapadanaya Krishna Prema Padayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namane Gorcha Senamaha. With this consideration, Advaitacharya Prabhu, promising to cause Lord Krishna to descend, began to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, with tulsi leaves and water of the Ganges. By loud cries, he invited Krishna to appear, and this repeated invitation attracted Lord Krishna to descend. Before the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 8 daughters took birth, one after another, from the womb of Sachi Mata, the wife of Jagannath Mishra. But just after their birth, they all died. Jagannath Mishra was very unhappy at the death of his children, one after another. Therefore, desiring his son, he worshipped the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. After this, Jagannath Mishra got a son by the name of Vishwarup, who was most powerful and highly qualified because he was an incarnation of Balaram. The expansion of Balaram, known as Sankarshan in the spiritual world, is the ingredient and immediate cause of this material cosmic manifestation. Let me just describe that briefly, immediate and ingredient cause. Ingredient cause, because there's two causes for the cosmic manifestation. One is the ingredients, which traditionally are called pradhan, the unmanifest stage of the modes of material nature. And the immediate cause is the implantation of the living entities within this pradhan, and the entering of the Lord within the pradhan as the super soul. Does everyone understand that point? So there's the unmanifest. It's like clay. Okay, let's say you have something you made of clay. There's two causes for, let's say, the statue that was made of clay. One cause is the clay itself, and the other cause is the person who shapes the clay into a specific way. So that's the ingredient and the immediate cause of the material cosmic manifestation. So the Lord is both causes. The Lord is the source of the ingredients, and he's also the cause of the manifestation or the variegatedness that takes place in the ingredients. The gigantic universal form is called the Visvarup, incarnation of Mahasankarshan. Thus, we do not find anything within this cosmic manifestation except the Lord himself. The thread and a cloth spreads both lengthwise and breadthwise, so everything we see within this cosmic manifestation is directly and indirectly existing in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is not very wonderful for him. The husband and wife, Jagannath Mishra and Sachi Mata, having gotten Visvarupa as their son, were very pleased within their minds. Because of their pleasure, they specifically began to serve the lotus feet of Govinda. In the month of January, in the year 1406 of the Shaka era, Lord Krishna entered the bodies of Jagannath Mishra and Sachimata. Jagannath Mishra said to Sachimata, "I see wonderful things. Your body is effulgent, and it appears as if the goddess of fortune were now staying personally in my home. Anywhere and everywhere I go, all people offer me respects. Even without my asking, they voluntarily give me riches, clothing, and padding." Sachimata told her husband, "I also see wonderful, brilliant human beings appearing in outer space, as if offering prayers." Jagannath Mishra replied, "In a dream I saw the effulgent abode of the Lord enter my heart, from my heart and into your heart. I therefore understand that a great personality will soon take birth." After this conversation, the wife and husband were very jubilant, and together they rendered service to the household, Shalagram Shila. In this way, the pregnancy approached its 13th month, but still there was no signs of the delivery of the child. Thus, Jagannath Mishra became greatly apprehensive. Nilamba Chakravarti, the grandfather of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then did an astrological calculation and said that in that month, taking advantage of an auspicious moment, the child would take birth. Thus, in the year 1407 of the Shaka era, in the month of Falgun, March, April, in the evening of the full moon, the desired auspicious moment appeared. So, Bhaktivedanta Thakur explains the astrological and astronomical configuration of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birth in his description of his horoscope. And this is a little technical, but it's interesting to read. The explanation of the horoscope given by Bhaktivedanta Thakur is that at the time of the birth of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the constellations were situated as follows. Shukra or Venus in the constellation of the Ashwini stars were in the Mesha Rasi, that means Aries. Ketu, the ninth planet, And Uttara Phalguni were in the Singha Rasi, that's Leo. Chandra, the moon, was in the Purva Phalguni, the 11th lunar mansion. Shani, Saturn, and Jeshta were in the Vishchakya, Scorpio. Brihaspati, that's Jupiter. And Purva Shada were in Danu, Sagittarius. Mangala, Mars, and Shravana were in Makara, Capricorn. Ravi, the sun, was in Kumbha Rashi, that's Aquarius. Rahu was in Purva Bhadrapada, and Buddha, Mercury, and Uttara Bhadrapada were in Mina or Pisces. The day was Singhal Lagna. According to the Jyotirveda or Vedic astronomy, when the figure of the lion appears both in the zodiac and at the time of birth, Lagna, this indicates a very high conjunction of the planets, an area under the influence of Sadvarga and Ashtavarga, which are all auspicious moments. When the spotless moon of Lord Chaitanya became visible, what would be the need for a moon full of black marks on its body? Considering this, Rahu, the black planet, covered the full moon, and immediately vibrations of Krishna, Krishna, Hari inundated the three worlds. In other words, Rahu, which is continually chasing after the moon to cover the moon, actually Rahu is a demon who only has his head, because he had his head cut off by the Mohini Murti incarnation of the Supreme Personality Godhead when he drank the nectar. So Rahu here is acting as a devotee and thinking, what's the need of this stupid moon? I can eat it, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared and he's actually the moon. So because of this, the tradition in India is whenever there's an eclipse that takes place, they don't worship the deities, they just don't eat, they don't sleep, they go and they chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And still today they follow that tradition. I was in Tirupati, and they actually closed the Tirumala temple during the time of the lunar eclipse. And just everybody was chanting the Lord's holy name. So therefore it was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's trick so that everyone would be chanting at the time of his appearance. All the people thus chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra during the lunar eclipse, and their minds were struck with wonder. When the whole world was thus chanting the holy name of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, in the form of Gaurhari, Krishna in the form of Gaurhari, advented himself on the earth. The whole world was pleased. While the Hindus chanted the holy name of the Lord, the non-Hindus, especially the Mohammedans, jokingly imitated the words. And according to Haridas Thakur, that's a type of namavash. Namavash means a reflection of the chanting, which means you can chant jokingly. Not that we should do that. But those who chant jokingly or by accident chant the holy name or even meaning something else, like the Muslims would chant sometimes, Ha Ram, Ha Ram, how horrible. So that we get benefit, or devotees or people go and stay at a Ramada Inn and they become Krishna conscious just by staying in the Ramada Inn. Ramada. And even when you divide the syllables, you know, in two different words and put some other syllable between, there's still some benefit there. One gets liberation just by chanting in the Namabhash platform. That was that description or discussion that Haridas Thakur had in the assembly house of the Majumdras. He said, liberation is just a byproduct of Namabhash. And this Gopal Chakravarti disagreed with him and said, it's not true. And he said, let's make a wager. If it's not true, I'm going to cut your nose off. And because he committed that offense to Haridas Thakur, very soon after that, his nose fell off because he got leprosy. So through Namabhas, one gets liberated. And liberation, of course, we are not so much interested. We are interested in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, we're interested in chanting Shuddhanama. So there's Namabhas. There is Namaparada, which is the offensive, chanting offensively, and there's also Shuddhanama. But another example of Namabhas is Ajamil. Ajamil was chanting, meaning the name of his son, Narayan, 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 and he got liberated, freed from the clutches of the Yamadutas. But he didn't go back to Godhead at that point. He had to, again, do some austerities, you know, straighten up his life, get away from all the bad association he had before. And then, when he was able to chant the Shuddhanam, then he went back to Godhead. The same Vishnudutas came and took him back to Godhead. All the ladies vibrated the holy name of Hari on earth. In the heavenly planets, dancing and music were going on, so for the demigods were very curious. What's happening here? In the atmosphere, all the ten directions became jubilant, as did the waves of the rivers. Moreover, all beings, moving and non-moving, were overwhelmed with the transcendental bliss. Thus, by his causeless mercy, the full moon, Gaurahari, rose in the district of Nadia, which is compared to Udayagiri, where the sun first becomes visible. His rising in the sky dissipated the darkness of sinful life, and thus the three worlds became joyful and chanted the holy name of the Lord. At that time, Sri Advaita Acharya Prabhu, in his own house at Shantipur, was dancing in a pleasing mood. Taking Haridas Thakur with him, he danced and loudly chanted Hare Krishna, but why they were dancing, no one could understand. In other words, they both understood that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was appearing. And in fact, before Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, while he was within the womb of Satyamata, Advaita Acharya would go to Satyamata's house, and he would smear sandalwood over her stomach, over the womb, and he would circumambulate her. And this was quite shocking for her. You know, because Advaita Acharya was quite old. He was old enough to be her grandfather. So here this old man comes through. You can imagine, you ladies, you know, if you're pregnant or something, and some older Vaishnava comes to your house and smears sandalwood over your stomach, circumambulates you and offers obeisances. You say, wow, what's happening here? So Advaita Acharya would do that. So he knew when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in the womb of Satyamata. Seeing the lunar eclipse and laughing, both Advaita Acharya and Haridas Thakur immediately went to the bank of the Ganges, bathed in the Ganges in great jubilation. Taking advantage of the occasion of the lunar eclipse, Advaita Acharya, by his own mental strength, distributed various kinds of charity to the brahmanas. When he saw that the whole world was jubilant, Haridas Thakur, his mind astonished, directly and indirectly expressed himself to Advaita Acharya. He said, your dancing and distributing charity are very pleasing to me. I can understand that there is some special purpose to these actions. Acharya Ratna, Chandrasekhar, and Shivas Thakur were overwhelmed with joy, and immediately they went to the bank of the Ganges to take bath in the water of the Ganges. Their mind full of happiness, they chanted the Hare Krishna mantra and gave charity by mental strength. In other words, they meditated on giving charity. So even if someone doesn't have anything to give, they can give it by meditation. In this way, all the devotees, because in Kali Yuga, you get benefit from doing something in your mind, wanting to do it. Kali Yuga is so nice that you're not held responsible for sinful things that you think about. And because the atmosphere is so polluted that basically it's, you know, it's hard to think, stop thinking of sinful things. So you're not held accountable for those things. In other yugas, if you even thought of something sinful, there's karma. You're responsible, you're culpable. But in Kali Yuga, no. But in Kali Yuga, you get the benefit from thinking of something nice. Let's say I think of serving the deities or offering something nice to the deities. Okay, I get the benefit. That doesn't mean you just sit down and think of it. Just like that brahmana who was offering the sweet rice to the deity, that story of the nectar of devotion. He was meditating, and then he burnt his finger when testing the temperature of the sweet rice. And Lord Vishnu laughed when he saw that, came down to this world and took the brahmana back to Godhead. So if one cannot do service externally, one can meditate on doing service, and one gets the same benefit. And sometimes we find ourselves in different situations where you can't do service. Just like when I'm traveling, I have my Govardhan Shivas I travel with, and obviously I'm not going to take them out in the middle of the plane and start chanting Chintamani as I'm pouring all the substances over them. That would be highly irregular, and probably people would commit offenses, right? And they might throw me off the plane, lock me up or something like that. You know, it's enough when I'm going through security and they take out the Shilas and they say, what's this? And they see all the crowns and the jewelry and the eyes on the stones. And I say, sacred stones. They said, yeah, okay, very nice. So therefore, you know, it's enough that they tolerate me in that way. Of course, they get the benefit of seeing the Shivas. But so when we're in the plane, we meditate on offering things to the deities and doing the puja and everything like that. So when you can't do it, then you can meditate. That's mental strength. All sorts of respectful brahmana gentlemen and ladies carrying plates filled with various gifts came with their presentation, seeing the newborn child, whose form resembled natural, glaring gold. All of them with happiness offered their blessings. I think it's time to greet the deities. So this evening we have a very nice program beginning at 4:30 with the Abhishek. Chaitai, continuing until about 7:30 when we take prasad. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Srila Prabhupada.